Okay, today is Wednesday, July 21st, 1993. We're in Anchorage, Alaska. My name's Dave Krupa, and I'm with Helen Cameron, who's part of the Cameron family. She grew up in the Copper River Valley, and we're going to talk about the history of her family, both her mother's side and her father's side, who both are long-term Alaskan families. So this is a tape for Wrangell St. Elias Jukebox Project. And Helen, I wanted to start by thanking you for taking the time to talk with us. Maybe start with a little bit of background, going back to when both of your families arrived in Alaska.
Well, my grandpa, Bailey, Sheffield Bailey, and Meta Marie Bailey came to Ketchikan with my mom when she was 14. My mother was raised in southeastern Alaska. My grandpa, Cameron, as a young man, came from Canada, came across the country, and he was driving the horses on the trail. We called the trail. It was mainly, I would say, the Richardson Highway, that area there. My grandmother, Cameron, my dad's mom, came from Fargo, North Dakota area, came to Sitka to see her brother. And when he died of TB in Sitka, she came up north and was working at one of the roadhouses on the trail when Grandpa was driving, and they met, married, went to Chitna, and in 1910, they built our family home, which we still have in Chitna, Alaska. This is where my father was raised. So, basically, I can tell you some of the things, but I wanted to mention first that since I have the Grandpa Bailey and my mother, it was Frances Cameron. She came to Chitna, like they say, well, how the story goes, it's a fact. I'm not trying to tell you a story, but anyway, how did they meet? Okay, Mom came to Chitna to teach school. Then they had a boarding house, and she was living in it, and underneath it there was a office for the Nabesna mine. This is the one time that my dad didn't work for highways, and he was working up at the Besna mine. Anyway, the landlady told my mother that everyone was going to chop their own wood. Mom came from southeast, and she didn't know anything about that. And she says, well, I'm not going to let anybody see me make a fool of myself. So she took the wood upstairs and was cutting it on, chopping it on a block. And she told me she put a carpet underneath it. Anyway, she was chopping the wood on the floor. Bang, bang. So the people from the office below, Joe Smith and my father, came upstairs to see what was going on. And so that's how they met. And later they married in 1935, June 10, 1935, in Chitna, Alaska, at my father's home, where they were married. And then therefore, they went to live in Nabesna, Alaska. I was, however, born in Cordova. Same place my father was born, basically, but it was called Eyak when he was born there. Then my brother was born in Ketchikan, Alaska, because Dad had to send us out, and he sent me, of course, to where his mom lived. The nearest hospital was Cordova, and my brother was born, and that's why he was born where her parents lived, in Ketchikan. So up at the mine there, I will tell one, I think, rather humorous story in a way. We lived about a mile from the mine, and we had a dog team, and I remember Dad used to always go up on skis to the mine, but there was a little road. Billy was going to be born, so my mother was, and I were all in Ketchikan. And Dad saw someone that was looked like they had a little bit too much to drink, and they were kind of laying across the road. And he thought, well, I think I better go out there and maybe pull this person off the road so if somebody goes up, they don't hit him or something. Dad said, I opened the door, and this Indian got up, and he said, I go, Mrs. Cameron, I go. I guess he'd had a run-in with my ma, because my dad said he laughed hard. He said, your mother is thousands of miles away. But he really got a big charge out of that. Dad worked for the post office. It was federal when he was there. And the one thing I remember is my father, no matter where we went, we had a basketball hoop. We went back many years ago, and we were up at the mine, and Dad was telling what everything was, and he said, "And there is my basketball hoop." And wouldn't you know, there was a basketball hoop. So that is basically the rundown of just a brief history of our family that way. But we went from Kunabesna, then we went to Gakona, where the Sunt family had the Gakona Lodge. And from there, we went to Valdez. Father was working for the highways. In this interesting point, the war broke out. And I remember the planes flying overhead and the blackouts. I think the thing my father remembered the most, however, was he tried to join and they would not let him. He was frozen with the federal government. Years later, he told me, "I'm 50 years old," and he said, "I can't retire." He said, "I'm too young. I'm over 25 years in." But he said, "You know, if I could have, Helen, when that war came on, if the federal government hadn't frozen him in his federal job," he said, "I'd have gone across the street and gone to work for somebody else." And I said, "So," he said, "you see, sometimes it takes a time while before things work out this way, but they all work out for the good if you wait and see what's going to happen." Anyway, we lived in Valdez. There was Sully there. Bill Egan was one of our friends there, I remember. Mom and Dad were active in Pioneers and many organizations. Summers, we would go to Copper Center. We lived in the Signal Corps house there. And that was like a better living in a tent, is basically what it was. And so we enjoyed them. Remember the Joy family? They had a boy and a girl, Bill and my age. We first met them, Vince Joy. They have the church is now a historical landmark there. Ma Barnes was one that owned Copper Center at that time. I'd like to say also Copper Center, the McQuarrie family was quite prominent. And I remember pictures of my dad, and he and Helen McQuarrie were playmates as children. Then after a time, Glen Allen, they started to decide that we needed the highway to go to Anchorage. See, Anchorage is the newest city in Alaska, really. The railroad is what started it, where they were starting from Seward to Fairbanks. So we went to where they had called the Junction now, of the Richardson, and my grandfather, my dad's father, worked the first 60 miles to be up to Eureka Roadhouse. Then we moved into Glen Allen, and we were the first all-white family there. The Hobson family were there. That's Walia Hobson and Frank Hobson and their children, and also Walter and Mamie Charlie and their family were there. And this is how Glen Allen, we worked the first year. Bill and I took correspondence course. I was in third grade, and Billy was in first, and Mom taught us the Calvert course. In those days, we didn't have any school courses in Alaska. We had to send to, this was in Baltimore, Maryland, for my grade school. And then later I took 2 years of high school, but they were from Lincoln, Nebraska. We still didn't have anything there, gang. So this is how we got started there and in Glen Allen. And as we lived in Glen Allen for a while, bit by bit other families started to come up, and that is when I believe Cy nearly lived at Chechachina, but Carol, his wife, Carol Beggs Neely, she and her family came up. They were one of the families that came up to Glen Allen. Several other, Jimmy Goodman, I know, is now working in Palmer. He was another one that came up from the lower 48. But anyway, all the different ones came and worked. We had our first school there. I remember it was Quonset Hut. It was at CAA, where the landing field. We called it the Dry, because they had a Dry Creek. That's where it was. And that Dad went into Chitna. The school, everything is closed in Chitna now. He took out all those old type desks, all the textbooks they had, and that is what we used for our first year of school. And we were thrilled to have a school. We had a one-room school, and it was really neat. Mainly we had the Hobson kids and a whole bunch of us together, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a big experience. I won't go into telling you about our first teacher. She was Helen Davidson Smith, Lofgren Blair. It ended up later, but anyway, that was another one. Another story for another time. And So after we stayed in Glen Allen, Dad worked. I want to go into saying this about my father. As I worked with the men, my dad was always a person that was very wise, knew people real well, and everybody liked him, I think, because he was this way, and he loved his own people. And although we're always been, we're white, we're Caucasian, and this sort of thing, but Dad was always felt that the native people in our country were part of us, because we always grew up with them and that sort of thing. So he was always very good to them, they were good to him, and it was just one of these things. And my dad was just my dad. I mean, he was never anybody that tried to put on. So the native people really got to liking him an awful lot, and they did a lot of things for us too in working and that sort of thing. And later years this showed up too. And as my mother mentioned, your father was the one person that practiced EEO before it was ever heard of. He wanted to be sure that the Alaskan people, and he meant the native people, had just as much right to have a job as these people, young men that would come up from the lower 48, and then they would hire them on and they'd get a job. And Dad thought, well, why can't the people that live in this country have a job too? And be treated just as equally as anyone else. So this is one of the things about my father. He was very fair and this sort of thing, and very honest, and I learned that he was one person you just didn't argue with. And as my mother said, you just can't win where he was concerned. One of the things about my father was, I can dearly remember, is if he loved you, he had a way, he never said it, but he teased the holy you-know-what out of you. And I know my mother was an excellent cook. At every Christmas or Thanksgiving, she would have a whole gang of people around the table, and they'd be saying, Francis, what a wonderful meal. And my dad would pipe up and say, she starves to death until anything tastes good. That's the secret of her good cooking. About that time, I don't know. But of course, he also told me when I was 13 and I had my first high heels, I looked like a Chinaman in stilts. So those are just a few little humorous remarks of his along the way. Dad, I wanted to mention one little thing. There are many things he told me as a girl about Augie Mack. He must have been a marvelous person. And he was an Indian. And so anyway, he said to my dad, it had to be after statehood. He says, you know, Bill, what's the matter? Now we got to have a degree to cut brush. You know, they were talking about the brush along the road so the cars could have their visibility. And my dad said, well, we became a state. And Augie Mack said, yeah, and the fish quit coming up the river, too. And then Dad said, well, Augie, he told him, I want you to cut this timber down over here. He said, so we can put these logs, he wanted to put it by to keep some rocks from sliding. And Dad said, I see this pickup come by. And this guy got up and went up where Augie was. So then Dad said, I waited, and after he left, I went over to Augie. I said, what do you want? And Augie Mack said, oh, he told me I had to have a permit to cut this brush. And Dad said, what'd you say? Augie said, I told him, me big dumb Indian, no speak English. And that is the truth. That's one of the many things. But Dad worked mainly, I would like to say that my dad was very legal-minded, excellent at math, and all this type of thing in the paperwork. He carried a lot of responsibility, and he knew this country like the back of your hand. And he knew the highways, because like as a boy he'd worked on them and everything. He just knew every turn, every which way, everything in the road and that sort of thing. Knew the country, loved the people. I would say if anything was Alaska, it would be my dad. He was Alaska. He lived it and that sort of thing. I have the same feeling for the country myself. Then we went, when my brother started high school in my junior year, I took 2 years of high school by correspondence there in Glen Allen. We went to Fairbanks, and their dad was assistant district engineer. He worked under Zimmerman and Woody Johansson, who was born in Kennicott, which is above Chitna, was his last boss that he had there. And then I went to high school there, and then I went to college. And then Dad went, we became a state. Well, you know, we was Alaska Road Commission, which one girl used to answer in switchboard, and she'd say, this is the Alaska Road Confusion, the Department of the Interior. Dad said one day the person on the other end didn't say anything, and she was scared for fear she had said it to the wrong person. So anyway, well, I was speaking of telephones. That reminds me of another thing one time. I never will forget there was an accident. We had these phones along the trail, and you have a ring on it. Well, everybody was curious what was going on. They'd pick up the phone, and they'd listen. Well, there'd been an accident, so I guess a lot of phones were off the hook. And my dad is trying to get through to get something done about something, and he can't get, nobody can hear each other. And finally, I heard him say, well, the few times ever, he said, if some of you people would get off this line, he said, you'll hear what's going on. He's, so I guess that they got off the line and they got through, because the phone system was kind of interesting. We didn't have like we do today. It was like two longs and a short or that type of thing. That was where you got your phone calls. It was, there's a lot of different things that we did and everything. I really love the way we lived. I appreciated the life. And like Dad said, you know, Helen, he said the Indians are more civilized, because we noticed after the Alcan opened, different things, we started having more crime and all that sort of thing when I was a very young girl. We never did lock our doors. We never had to do any of these things. But after we got civilization, my father always told me, Helen, this is civilization. And I just looked at him. Because it civilization does bring some things like this that we just didn't have at all in those days, basically. Everybody took care of everything, and we just didn't have that type of a problem, really. It was a wonderful, wonderful life, wonderful way to live and everything. And I started to tell you that we became a state, and so the Alaska Road Commission no longer was a federal. It was state. So in order for my dad to get his retirement, my dad went to Juneau, where he was for 20 years working for the highways down there, and it was then called the Bureau of Public Roads. I might mention Ben Stewart was one of the men that he worked with, and he was a district engineer when Dad was in Glen Allen, and then Ben was down in Juneau. Ben's boy, who is also a B.D. Stewart Jr., is in Fairbanks now. And Ben, yes, he works on the highway, too. B.D. works on the highway, too. That's what we always called it, was B.D. And Ben has passed away also. Hank Qualvick, another one of Dad's friends who worked there, has also passed away. But his wife, Mary, who was raised with father, my dad, in Chitna, she was Mary Moore, is living in Boise, Idaho at the moment. And Mary also was one of my mother's students. Jack Coates was also another of my mother's students. Oh, on my mother, another story about her. Bob Coates was a little bit younger. He was about four, I think Mother said. And he was putting his fingers in some jam or jelly. And his mother wanted to know what he was doing. And he said, well, I want to have red fingernails like our new teacher, Miss Bailey. So I take it she had her fingernails painted. Anyway, these are just some little things that happened. We had a good time. We appreciated each other, and we just, everybody got together. One pastime that I know everyone always did, I can remember, was card playing. Everybody played cards. And we just had a good time and enjoyed it and that sort of thing. And Pinochle and Crib were the two that I was around the most, and we really had a lot of fun with it. But we made our own fun. We read. I want to say my father was always interested in the news. As a young boy, his father had something happen, and he tended to be on the deaf side, so Dad would listen to the news as a boy and then relate it to his father. And from the time I can remember, my dad was always weeding time and listening to the news. The other thing he loved was sports. I might interject here, too. Dad went to school all the time in Chitna, and if there wasn't a school in Chitna, which there wasn't a few years, he would go to Cordova, and his mother would go there, and Grandpa would stay in Chitna and mind the house and that type of thing. But when it became high school time, there was no high school to go to. And my grandmother, being one of the oldest children in the farm family, had to stay home. She only got a fourth grade education. So she was determined her son was going to go to school. So they would go out every winter, and he graduated. It was called Broadway High. It is now Edison Tech in Seattle. It's on Capitol Hill. And that's where my dad went to high school. But that's basically what he saw in the States. I think that one of the things he really enjoyed a lot there was sports. I think that her father picked up a great love of sports and this sort of thing. He was an avid sports person. He loved all types of sports. I mean, it was fun to go to. He made a game alive for you. Something my dad was interested in, he was a quiet man, but what he had to say, you better listen to, because usually there was something there, always. And he had a sense of humor, and these are things that are kind of precious to us now. And later, Dad and Mom, they had my brother and I were both grown, and we were in, Mary had our children, and we were in Juneau with them at the same time. My mother and dad became, I might say, grandparents, boom. I had a daughter, and a month later, my brother had a girl, and then a year later, he had a boy, the day after the first one, and then a year later, he had another girl, and then my son came about 5 months later. So they had five grandchildren, boom, like that. I want to say my father was an excellent grandparent, and both my mom and dad were. Mother sewed and cooked, and they really enjoyed the children, and it was a marvelous time. And I would say my two nieces and nephew are more like my own children, and they're more like my children's brothers and sisters, and they are like cousins because they were very, very close. My brother also, I want to say, is Bill Cameron. He was working for what you call the Juneau District. My dad was working for the federal, and I was over there at the state district part of over the whole state, where my brother was in the Juneau area. So all three of us at one time were working for the highway department there. Bill Bill Cameron, and of course my grandfather, my dad's father, was Bill Cameron. They're all Bill Camerons. You can't miss us that way. Anyway, we went in, Dad finally retired, and Mom went out. My grandmother and grandfather, Cameron, had gone to Seattle and lived in a house, and I had a house built. So the Mom and Dad tore that house down, and they have a house that is now in Seattle today, and they went out there. And in the summers, they would live out there, and in the winter, I've got it mixed up. In the winters, they live out there, and the summers, they come back, and they'd spend about 6 months in Chitna, and Dad would go back there and live. First, they came up in the motorhome for a couple summers, and then they kind of went in and got Chitna fixed up and everything else, and they stayed in Chitna and that sort of thing. And it was just home. And in fact, our house was, it was neat to go there. You know, I can remember going there, and all these old Indians would come in, and people, and they'd say this, and one man came in, and my dad was asking him questions, and after he left, Dad said, "You know who that was?" I said, "No." He said, "That's the last chief of the Goodlatte tribe." So it was really interesting the way that the different people came around that. I wanted to say my mother was a wonderful homemaker. She was a mother mainly to Bill and I, and kept house and this sort of thing. And when Dad was working and did that type of thing, did sewing and all that sort of thing, Dad was the one that did the legal business and kept the job going and that sort of thing, but was definitely very well remembered. I'm sure it will be all his life because of the way he dealt with the other people. I think you'll find the people will generally all have the same impression that he was fair and honest and just down to earth. And being raised in Alaska, there's no put on. I tell you what, you can have $1 million and you are no better than the guy that had 10 because in those days, we all had to get along, or we just didn't have nobody. And so we all learned, and we all became like a family. It was funny, Alaska in those days, that's what it was like. We were all a big family. And now as I hear of different people that Dave has talked to, I know all of them. I've either gone to school with them, or they knew me since I was a little kid or something like that, because we're just a big, huge family, and we're quite united, but it's neat to have this type of thing. I was trying to think of any history that would be interesting for people to have, because I wanted to mention that Helen McQuarrie March, her father was a marshal in Copper Center, who I mentioned was my dad's playmate. She's living in Homer, Alaska, and that would be someone that would be might be of interest to different ones. And Dad said that he only saw his grandmother once, and that was in B.C. when she died, that we lost track of my Grandpa Cameron's people. We do know that my Grandpa Cameron was planning, evidently was being a veterinarian, because when one day we were out in the garage in Chittenden, we found a bunch of veterinary deals for horses. So he must have been thinking of being a doctor. And I know he loved horses. Where he loved horses, my dad dearly loved dogs. And I remember us having our dog team when we were in the Besna area. And I remember that my dad, Keno, who was the lead dog, always pulled him up to work, about a mile to the mine. Dad did that on skis. He wasn't on feet, folks. So this was an interesting... I think I popped me off here. I did. I just got rid of myself. Anyway, I just mainly was trying to think of the different things that would be interesting to people, other people there, that were in the case, Dr. Yamada, Kelly Yamada, who is an eye doctor, he is an optometrist in Seattle, is one of the people that was in school with my father when he was in high school, so he would know about those years. I would like to relate my daughter, Robin, is married into another Alaska family. She is married Al Doyle's grandson, who is from the Nome area, and her mother-in-law is Bunny, and so she's a Heiner, because Lonnie Heiner is her father-in-law, and Lonnie and I went to college together, so as you see, we just can't get away from each other one way or another. One of my mother's cousins, Sam King, was in charge at one time of Denali Park. And I remember we used to go up there as a family, and we drove all over that park at that time, which you can't do now. So this is one thing. My Aunt Christy was, of course, very popular, but very avid worker in Pioneers of Alaska and in Ketchikan. So the whole family has been in Alaska. We've done many things. But I would say the main thing is Alaska's Alaska. To me, Anchorage is a city. It's huge. When I went outside, this is kind of, my mother said my father enjoyed this more than anything. I was 9, my brother was 7. We drove all the time to Glen Allen. I had to have braces, so we were in to Palmer every 2 weeks there for a while. And I was having these braces. Doc Sims was the dentist that did this. And we would come into Anchorage. We didn't have stoplights in Anchorage. The park strip, after you went past the park strip, you were out of town. The Coates, Mrs. Coates was my dad's teacher, Elsie Coates. I remember we used to stop and see Elsie. And she was way out in the boondocks, and now she's in the corner of 11th and E. Anyway, we went outside. And I'd always seen the planes fly overhead. Well, this was my first plane ride. Well, it was a real bumpy one, let me tell you, folks. We all had our seat belts fastened and everything else. And I looked at my dad, and I said, I didn't know there were bumps in the air. And then we came into Seattle, and it was real clear. And I kept pointing to my dad and saying, what's that? And after the fifth time he said, Seattle, I looked at him and I said, gosh. And I thought Anchorage was big. Then my brother was downtown, and he said to Dad, he says, what's wrong, Dad? He says, what's wrong with these people? He says, they run to the corner, then they stop and they wait. Look at that guy, Dad. He's running to the corner. Now he's going to stop and wait. Now what are they doing? We didn't know what stoplights were for. Okay, we want to read a little bit about the past here, about work. So I'm going to backtrack, and I'm going to go back to to Nabesna, where Dad was. This is the one time that he did not work for the highways. He worked for the United States Post Office, And basically, that was doing all the postal work that you would do at a post office. It was a one-man job for selling stamps, you name it. I do remember that the auditors had to go, and the auditors begged him to please make one mistake so they could have it. As I said, he was excellent in math. He could just add your checkbook up three times faster than you could do it on a calculator. So, although he said his mother had a lot to do with him learning his math, my grandmother, when I knew her, could read, write, you name it. She could do everything. So she had learned this because she was determined. But Dad worked for the highways when he was younger, before that, though, and I know Grandpa had worked for the highways, and one time when he was sick, he would go see my dad and my grandfather, rather, his father, and he would tell him what to do, and they would run the camp from there. The road commission camps, I want to describe briefly to you there, were just tents. You didn't even have a wood floor. Many times all you had was a dirt floor, and there were cots, and that was your camp, and you had a cook tent, and they would have the cook to prepare the food there, and that was it, and that was where the men worked, and that's where they lived in the summer, and we didn't have all the fancy things that we have nowadays to keep things cold or anything, but these men worked. They built the highways, they built this country, and nobody complained. Good grief, the tourists come up here and they complain that there's a bump in the road now. Anyway, that was how Dad started out, mainly working in that. And then he went into Valdez. When he was working, he was in the office, basically, in there. And that's when I mentioned he was frozen in his job. And he did the office work. When we went to Glenown, that's when Dad started to go out, and he would go on the highways. And go down the highways, and they'd inspect culverts and inspect the bridges, all these different things they would do. When he was in Valdez, I remember the war broke out, and he was frozen in that job. But they had gotten together, the highways department, many years, I found out later, and decided if the Japanese invaded Alaska, they had all planned where they were going to blow up every bridge that there was on the highways. Because they figured that would stop, put a little stop to their doing very much. So that was that war was I was very, very young, but I can still remember a lot about it. And we all knew the Japs were on the Aleutians. By the way, I might mention, speaking of the Japs and the Aleutians, Phil Holdsworth and Peggy Holdsworth were very good friends of ours who were captured by the Japanese and were out on that island where they were captured for a year, and I know that at one time that they told us they were also hungry, they had a cat, and they killed it, and that's what they ate for Thanksgiving dinner, and Peggy told me one time she just went to bed and let the shells go. She said, if they're going to kill me, they're going to kill me, I don't care. But Phil was later, was one of Bill Egan, who was our first governor. He chose him to, I think he was in the Department of Mines, and he was head of that. So they've been, and Phil Ames also was born around Kennicott area. Dad knew his father. I never did meet his dad, but Dad knew his dad real well. Remembered him. Of course, we all knew each other in those days. I might add that my dad talked about the different families and things that happened along the way, and that the Nimi family, not Nimi, pardon me, I'm trying, O'Neill is the name I want to say, O'Neill family. They were up there, a huge family. There's still O'Neills all over the place. And they had a hotel somewhere around the McCarthy-Kennicott area. I remember slides Dad telling us about it. He also showed me an airfield that's up there. He said, you see that field? And I said, yes. He said, well, he said, your grandfather is the one that built that. So these men did a lot of work in those days that we wonder sometimes how they ever did it. And they survived some pretty cold winters and things like that, and I never, ever heard anyone complain. I would like to say that I know my mother and dad were married in 1935, and O.A. Nelson was who married them. I was telling Dave about the time they got married, they had to keep it kind of quiet because they didn't know if my mother was going to teach next year, and you couldn't teach in those days and be married. So O.A. was going to marry them, and Mother said, well, here he came, and he had this pipe, and he was in his coveralls, and she said he got behind the garage, and he just took off his coveralls, and he was all dressed up in a suit, and he just pushed his wrenched down, and he came over to the house, and they were buried in my grandpa and grandma Cameron's house in Chitna. So, and Chase, I wanted to say, was the head of the, was another character. He was head of the store. Well, you know, it was icy in the winter, and this one fella went sliding out the door, and my mother just happened to take a step behind him. Well, there was one of the old Indians there, and he went to Chase, and he said, you know, he says, hi, you skookum school teacher. She throw Harry Moore out the boarding house door. And, of course, Chase would keep a straight face and later tell people about these things. My mother told me about that one. I imagine he heard many a tall tale. In fact, I not tale, but things that happened and that sort of thing. Because our Indians didn't talk to everyone. And they still don't just talk to everyone, but someone they knew that they trusted they would talk to. I'd like to say that Dad worked in Glen Ellyn when we were there. We were the first all-white family, as I mentioned there. And basically, Dad's job was to be in charge of the camp, and we had the families, and we had a garage, and we had cook building. We had everything there. Then, at that time, Dad would go up. Our responsibility went beyond Paxson area, and that was about the end of the line, Salina, and then Chestachina was, that was down the Toke Road, and then it was up about Paxson area on the Richardson. You've got to remember they had, your Richardson Highway went from Fairbanks to Valdez, and then of course they later built the Toke Highway, which that went down. So that's how we got to know the Neelys. As a girl, I always knew the Neely family real well. We knew all the roadhouses, and I remember Bill and I would ride in the, we'd always ride in Dad's pickup, and Mom and Dad and I, and we'd all sing, because we didn't have radios in those days or anything, and it was one way we learned songs and that sort of thing, but we just inspect, that's how Dad would do his inspections, and we'd take us with him, and he'd inspect, like, they'd be looking at the culverts, you'd say, what are they doing on the roads? The brush needed to be cut so that people could be seeing all these overhaul things so that the roads could be taken care of well. We didn't have any paving really go on here, as you call, like the blacktopping. All our roads were dust and that type of thing, basically, until after statehood, and that's when we started to get more of our blacktopping and that type of thing came in here then. A little bit came before that, but some of it came before. It started a little before that, but basically that's when she started. Real big push was to get everything blacktopped. But we used to have snow that. I remember Billy and I, we would have these great big carryalls. They'd be trying to build the road and telling our mother, oh, Mom, there's nothing to it. I'd try to drive by something like that, I think, and I told my mom that. But Dad was always busy. Also, you had to check on your equipment. Dad was also very responsible and had a wonderful working relationship, but one of his, I think, greatest assets that he had was being able to work with all types of people and deal with these people and have a relationship and this sort of thing and a good rapport, and so to be sure the machinery was kept going and all these different things were his responsibility on the highways and that. So he carried a lot of responsibility, and then if there was a problem or something, to take care of that and so on. And I never heard him complain, never heard him brag. My dad wasn't one of these type of people. He just went out and did it, and that was the way it was. And he was a very modest person, I would say. And in fact, Bill and I feel real privileged that we have him for a dad. But I'll tell you one thing, he was one dad you didn't dare pull anything on, because if you did, you'd be sorry. That's one thing I feel that way about him. And he, like I say, we did have at Glen Ellyn, then finally, what they used to use, like I mentioned, the old phones, but they found finally, after a while, they got the radios, and they would have radios at the different camps, and they would radio in, like, we need this supply, or we need this, and that sort of thing. I remember Dad being on the radio and having a radio in the house there where he could, in the office and everything, we get access to it right away. This basically is what it is. It's just running the highways, running the works, working along. And Dad never I never felt like we were anybody particular, but Dad, you were working with Dad. It's just like I had a person that I had as a supervisor. I never felt you as my supervisor because it seemed like you were working with them. And I think that there's just something really special about that. It's different. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to give the impression to anyone that my dad was, hey, you do this type of person. Mm-hmm. Nuh-uh. That wasn't Dad.
Did he have any stories that he related to you about characters along the roads there or people at the roadhouses or anything like that? Or people you remember, old-timers you remember?
Well, yes, several of those. We had a lot of those. They were all, of course, we were all characters, but Triber, I remember Forrest, he was a character, and he was always pulling stunts in this way or that sort of thing, and you never knew what Forrest was going to do next. He was, if there was something going on, Forrest loved to be in on it. I'll tell you another person that was a character, and if you get stories from his, it was Bill Egan. He was always pulling things, and my dad, Sullivan, my dad called him Sully. This is in Valdez, folks, when they were young, and they were always up to something. Huddleston was another one that was in on every prank that was ever pulled, and there were lots of them. I know there's something about Bill Egan. They had a bar or something, and he put a damp cloth over the stovepipe and smoked all the people out. I don't know, you name it. They're up to one thing or another there. Bill has a boy, Dennis, who would be living in Juneau, and Dennis has two girls. And of course, Bill's passed away, but Neva is still with us, and she's a lovely lady. She lives in Anchorage and visits her grandchildren. But I was trying to think. Squeaky Pete was there in Copper Center Lodge. There was Squeaky Pete, and you can imagine the way he talked. That's where he got his name from. And it was Art Lafferty, always around there. Very artistic, very, I was really shocked at the lovely letter he had English, because he kind of looked like kind of a bum type of character, but he really, that man knew his stuff, and he was really sharp. Hmm. And we had Big Carl. He was a huge guy. Mother said he was the only person she knew that ever fell into the Copper River that came out of it alive. Oh. And we had, now I do remember your telephone poles in those days were like a tripod. We had a greater man, and he was crippled. And he was on snowshoes. Well, I don't know what happened, but anyway, a moose chased him, and he went up one of those telephone poles. And I remember he told my dad, he says, Bill, I don't know how I did it. But he did it, but Dad would laugh about that and say that this was one thing that had happened. There were stories in the cooking, because we had these cookhouses, and Dad told of one where this one man said, okay, he said, I'll be the cook. But he says, the first man that makes one complaint, he's going to be the cook. Well, for a joke, this guy made these biscuits one day, and he made them real hard, just like rock. And Dad said they was like family style. He put them on the table, and he said, everybody ate one of those. And nobody said one word. And Dad always laughed about it because he said he got a big kick out of pulling that little prank. I think a lot of our fun was had this way. It was kind of a humorous type of fun, you know, and finding out what you could do and that sort of thing, and maybe teasing this person and that person. And all the guy was doing was really playing a joke on him. And, of course, I suppose if one of them said a word, they'd have got the job being cook, and they didn't want it, Dad said. So they all decided they better shut up and eat him. And it was a job to feed a whole bunch of people. But I had been in those cookhouses as a girl, and, boy, did they get to eat well, I thought. It was really marvelous. There were the different characters. Bill Hammer was at the, you never knew what he was at the, I know one thing my mother was mad about him for doing. He was at the, had the warehouse. He was in charge of it. Well, Billy, my brother, and his pal, Jimmy Kwalvik, loved garlic. And Hammer was always giving him garlic, and they'd come home stinking. Mother said, if he ever does that again, I'm going to wring his neck. He wasn't too popular at times for doing some things like that. Of course, that didn't mean any different thing. We were always friends anyway. But we had these different little things that we did. Hank Kwalvik was always a character. Of course, if you want a character, one character that I remember very vividly. And her name was, as I mentioned, that teacher. The first teacher we had was this Helen. She was Helen Davidson Smith then. That's the two names she had at that time. Anyway, to start this off, I'm just going to say briefly, one time she'd gotten into some trouble there, so she was at Glen Allen Lodge toward the end of the year, and she told my father, she said, "You don't treat me like a lady." And my dad said, "When you act like a lady, I'll treat you like one." Helen Smith made our school year very interesting. We had a half-hour singing every morning. I know we'll forget this as long as I live. We had a husky dog in our room, and she was always eating the top of our cake, and Cy Neely and I were always threatening to put hot peppers in it, so she'd have this hot pepper on it. And we had quite a time with her, and she would tell stories. She would be, and she'd mark our papers, and she'd look at one side and the other, and she'd just put okay, or every now and then she'd put check. Well, my dad would go over the things. He'd say, "Hey, this was marked wrong, and it's right, and this was not is wrong, and how come it's not marked wrong?" Well, big mouth me, I had to go and say something. Well, Helen D. ended up saying, she told my parents, she said, "I don't know how you could have one child so wonderful and one so terrible." I was a terrible one. My brother got A's 5 months straight. Anyway, she was a character, too. In fact, she bawled me out one time in school because my dad didn't have the road to Valdez open. And those were the days we had to have the summit, you know, had to be cleared so they couldn't get to Valdez. And she had a house in there, and she wanted to go in there, and the road wasn't open. Anyway, that was just, that's some of the people. There were women, too, like Ma Barnes was quite a character at Copper Center. And having all those characters around there and that sort of thing, and keeping that roadhouse running and all the characters are going in and around there, it was something else, too.
Now, was she the person who ran the roadhouse before
yes.
Ashby took it over?
Yes, Ma Barnes was before Ashby took it over, right.
Oh, okay.
The Ashby family came from Valdez, basically, and Mom Fawcett was a mother. And Pop Fawcett had, because they were the ones that, the Ashbys. I know one of the aunts, George Ashby's aunt, was a tall, I saw a picture of her, it was by Grandma Cameron, and she was a very tall woman, and so they were in this country for a very, very long time, the Ashby family. However, I never knew them at all until we went to Valdez, and that's when we got to know the Ashbys. And then later, of course, they bought the roadhouse. But Ma Barnes was the one there. Dad remembers it when there was another family, was it Blix? I think it was Blix, B-L-I-X,
yeah.
Owned that roadhouse. But he remembers that too, in those days. And then Ma Barnes, but she was there, always there and working in the kitchen. And she did the cooking in the kitchen and all that sort of thing. And you ate all these roadhouses in those days. When you went to them, they were family style. Every one of them I went to, the Kona, you name it, they would just sit down at a great big table and they just put the food on the table like a family style. That's the way it was served. Hmm. And they had a little store, which wasn't very much. We got our food. I will tell you this, it might be something interesting to people. It came from Anchorage, and the mail truck would bring, Stedman would bring it in, and he would also bring food in. We'd order food, and Mom told me we ordered our food from Chitna, from the cash store, because they'd order case lots and that sort of thing, and then he'd drop off so much from there, and then we would pay Chitna, the cash store. It was Chase was the one that ran the cash store, and we would pay them. And, of course, O.A. Nelson was still living then, and Adrian and that sort of thing. And we went into Chitna quite often. I remember we went in there, and we picked berries, and Mother'd make jam and jelly, and Mary Qualbeck, who was Mary Moore when she was a girl, and grew up with my dad, and did those things. So we were in and out of Chitna all the time because it was always home.
Hmm.
And that sort of thing to us. Bill and I always will remember that place. In fact, it's still in the family today.
How much did people get involved in hunting and fishing for what today we would call subsistence?
Subsistence? Basically, anything that people killed in those days was used for subsistence. I remember the one thing, the moose that was killed, Bill, up at Sourdough, Krause, And my mother always said she loved this moose the best because he took care of it. There's a certain way, and you have to hang that moose and let it, and then Bill had a howl, and he just did everything. And she said his moose meat was the best of any moose meat. There were a lot of people that, men, my father wasn't a hunter, nor much of a fisherman. He said he would shoot at a spruce end because anything that let you shoot at it three times in a row deserved to be killed. Those are practically his exact words. And we went fishing a few times, you know, but mainly for grayling, and those are the type of fishing that. But there were different ones that would go, but they always went out, the idea was go out, get a moose, and then we'll have some meat for the winter. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing, and they would even share. Like somebody would get a moose, and so they'd give somebody else some of this and something of that, and so on. And like with your fish and this sort of thing, there was no spoiling. And of course, we all made do. We didn't have. I remember that both my dad and I loved canned milk, and I had to learn to like fresh milk when I got to Fairbanks because we were so used to canned milk. Finally. Before we got to Fairbanks, Starlac, I believe Mom got, and she started to mix it, and we'd get it cold, it would taste good. But it took a long time, and I still do love canned milk to this day because of it. And I think that this is why I do not really care about melons, or I don't care about, for instance, bananas. We didn't have very many of those. We had lots of oranges and apples. I got grapes to come in. I will tell you one story mentioning grapes that is a true story. This is when Dad was up at Nebesna. And his mother grew, she was a wonderful farmer. But she grew these onions, and they were hot. And Dad loved hot things. And he was sitting there, and he just bite the top of the onion off and eaten. And one of the Indians, and of course they were a bit out of the business, wanted to know what it was, and Dad told him it was an onion and it was hot and take care. Well, he said he wanted to try one, and so finally Dad said okay, and he bit the thing off like that, and Dad said he headed right for the creek. Dad said it couldn't have been 2 weeks later, and he says so it was summer and everything else, so they happened to have some grapes, and he was sitting there popping grapes in his mouth. And he said, the same Indian came by. And Dad wanted to try some. And Dad said, there was no way. He said, that Indian was having no part of those grapes. He said, after what I'd done before, he didn't forget that onion at all. And different ones in the different places, it was fun. My mom, I will tell you another humorous event I never will forget. It was the 4th of July. And we were out from Valdez, and both of my grandmothers, my Grandma Bailey had come up from Ketchikan, and then my Grandma Cameron and Grandpa Cameron were there. And I would say, anyway, there was a dump truck. And as I said, my dad was responsible for the equipment. It belonged to the road commission. And this Indian was drunk, and he decided he was going to take that dump truck. And he kept pounding on the door. Well, we didn't have a lock on the door. So finally, Mom got both my grandmom to she said, I want, she got a, one of the, had the old, if you ever seen a wooden potato masher, the old-fashioned type, you know. Well, she got both of them to lean on the door. She said, when I give the word, she said, you let go. So when they did, then she cocked him over the head with a potato masher. Then my Grandma Cameron picked up this little board off of, I don't know, one of those, what do you call it, like egg carton, or not egg crates, I mean. And it had a little nail on the end of it. I remember seeing her, and she chased him all the way across that bridge in Copper Center, and that Indian was running for dear life. And my grandma was running right after him. And boy, did he run fast. But it was rather humorous the way it took place and that sort of thing. And of course, the one thing about the Indians, they didn't forget this type of thing. That may have been the Indian that said, I go, Mrs. Cameron, I go. I don't remember, but I know they didn't forget these type of things. The Indians were quite humorous. They were also, I don't want to make fun of them, because they were a very intelligent, they are very intelligent people. Dad tells of Horse Creek Mary. She was an old Indian, and he tells of how the cars first came out, and she'd wait around the corner, and then she'd hear the car coming, and she'd start brushing around on the grass and looking, and the car'd stop, and he'd say, "What's the matter?" She says, "Oh, I lost a dollar." So the guy gave her a dollar, and she'd just wait for the next car. And he said she'd come, and you were new to Chitna, she'd come and she'd knock at your door, and she'd open up her head, and she'd say, "Oh, I got that little bit of rice. Can you give me some food, please?" She didn't need food. She's smarter than a whip is what she was. I remember a kid that was my age when the tourists, when the Alcan, and all these tourists were flooding all over the place, and of course they'd get into Chitna and all this sort of thing, and so they'd put these, they'd put a quarters, and they'd put nickels, and they'd put dimes out, and they'd ask this Gulata boy, you know, which he'd take. Well, he'd take the nickels is what he'd take, and so finally one of the people there that knew him said, "Well, you know," he said, "Well, I know," he says, "it's worth twice as much," but he says, if I do that, then they won't offer it to me again." So he was playing dumb, you see, and who was being, he was fooling them. He knew what was going on. So I will say that the Native people have been one of our best friends and family in the world, and if anybody can help you and that sort of thing, they'll be one of the first ones to help you and that sort of thing. And they're very wise in different ways. I remember my mother, I mentioned the Copper River, and I remember my mother telling my brother and I, "If you ever go near that Copper River," she said, "I'm going to tie a rope around you and throw you in." She said, "Only one person's ever come out of there alive. That was Big Carl." And this is true. It's a very treacherous river. It scares me when I think of them fishing down there now. And anyway, one time my brother, this is in Glen Allen where the creek was, he got playing by the river. He was supposed to be playing by a creek. Mother wouldn't stand for that. She didn't want to get near that river. Anyway, she started to push his head down to the water, and he was fighting her. And finally, Mother says she got close to the water, and my brother says, "Hang on tight, Mommy, hang on tight." And then she said, she switched him with a switch all the way home. So these are just different things. I do remember another incident. This is where Jimmy Goodman is involved. Now, Jimmy and I were in the same grade. My brother's a couple years behind us. And we were going down to Dry Creek. And at that time, they'd finally made the road to it, went straight. And the first time, I didn't go down, but Bill and Jimmy went around where the bridge went out. The second time, okay, hold on just a second.